Welcome to Damn Good Movie Memories with your host, Brian Davis. This podcast is the cure for your long commute and super boring workday.
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind transporting something for me.
No questions asked.
Why not?
From the maker of The Professional and La Femme Nikita.
Once we make a deal, the terms of that deal cannot be changed or renegotiated.
Frank Martin is the best in the business.
$75,000. Half now, half on delivery.
He never made a mistake until today.
What kind of deal am I in?
Deep trouble.
You know what to do.
Quiet.
Come on, go, go, go!
Why'd you try to kill me?
You broke the rules. You opened the package.
This fall, rules are made to be broken. The Transporter.
Hey there, it's Brian Davis, and for this week's episode, we're going to cover the movie The Transporter from 2002. The studio was 20th Century Fox, the release date was October 2nd, 2002. The running time, 92 minutes, and was rated PG-13. The budget was $20.5 million. The box office took in $25.3 million, making it the 99th ranked movie of 2002. That was domestic gross. It did take in an extra $19 million internationally. Rotten Tomatoes gives it 54% rotten from 128 reviews. Their consensus is The Transporter delivers the action at the expense of coherent storytelling. Roger Ebert, at the time, gave it 2.5 out of 4 stars. Here's his review. The marriage of James Bond and Hong Kong continues in The Transporter, a movie that combines Bond's luxurious European locations and the love of deadly toys with all of the tricks of martial arts movies. The movie stars Jason Statham, who has pumped a lot of iron since Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, as Frank Martin, aka The Transporter, who will transport anything at a price. The initial chase sequence is sensationally good, but then aren't all movie chase scenes sensationally good these days? There have been so many virtuoso chase sequences lately that we go jaded, but this one, with the car bouncing down steps, squeezing through narrow lanes, and speeding backwards on expressways, is up there with the recent French chases like Ronin and The Bourne Identity, both of which we've covered on this podcast. The movie combines the skills and the trademarks of its director, Corey Yoon, and its writer, co-producer, Luc Besson. The Hong Kong-based specialist in martial arts movies has 43 titles to his credits, many of them starring Jet Li and Ki Shu. This is his English language debut. Besson, now one of the world's top action producers, he has announced 9 films for 2003 and also has Wasabi in current release, likes partnerships between action heroes and younger, apparently more vulnerable women. Those elements were central in his directions of La Femme Nikita, The Professional, and The Fifth Element. However, too much action brings the movie to a dead standstill. Why don't directors understand that? Why don't they know that wall-to-wall action makes a movie less interesting, less like drama, more like a repetitive video game? Stunt action sequences are difficult, but apparently not as difficult as good dialogue. Unless you're an early teen special effects zombie, movies get more interesting when the characters are given humanity and dimension. Boy, he nailed it on that one, especially today in 2024. Back to the review, Frank Martin is an intriguing man in the opening scenes, and we think maybe we'll learn something about his harsh code and lonely profession. But no, we get car leaps from bridges onto auto transporters, parachute drops onto the tops of moving trucks, grenades, rocket launchers, machine guns. At one point, a friendly inspector asked Martin to explain 50,000 spent rounds of ammo. There is, of course, an underwater adventure. Tribute to Besson's early life as the child of scuba diving instructors. At one point, Martin tells Lai, it's quiet, too quiet. It wasn't nearly quiet enough. And that's the end of Ebert's review. This isn't a horrible review, but not glowing either from Ebert. But man, again, he's ahead of his time. Because today, especially like action movies and superhero movies, they're all like that. Films today are shot like video games, which I think maybe kids like watching that. But if I wanted to watch a video game, I'd go play a video game. I want to watch a movie for the sake of the art and something creative and unique that comes from the director themselves, not just CGI, which anyone can do. I mean, I don't mean to downplay CGI. CGI is wonderful, but it gets to the point where it's lazy filmmaking, and it does all look like video games. I don't want to watch a video game. And that doesn't make me old. That makes me, like, a film buff. Now, I've mentioned in past episodes, Jason Statham is my movie actor man crush. You know, Bill Roseberry, who is often on this podcast, he'll say that it's Matthew McConaughey for him. But minus Statham, as his films and his roles embody everything that was great about action stars back in the 80s and 90s. And at that point, in 2002, Statham wasn't quite an action star yet. But The Transporter was part of the beginning of his action film stardom internationally. Alright, let's get into the film. So it opens with the viewer being introduced to Frank Martin, that's Jason Statham, who is meticulous with every aspect of his job. He's an ex-Special Forces soldier who is now hired by high-priced clients to transport people or items for a large fee. His vehicle of choice is a black BMW 735i, which has all sorts of gadgets, which prevents him from being caught, like a mechanism that swaps out his license plate and a keypad, which has a code that is required to prevent someone from stealing or taking over driving his vehicle. The real BMW that was used has a V12 engine. This was a pretty rare vehicle and very fast, according to Statham. His latest client is a group of bank robbers in the city of Nice, France. And this group of men quickly learn the rules Frank always puts in place before doing a job.
Let's go. Let's go.
This for you.
You can count. I'm impressed. Now drive.
Rule one.
Never change the deal. The deal was transportation for three men with a combined weight of 254 kilos.
Yeah? Well, this is a new deal.
An extra 80 kilos means we'll not make your destination on the gas I have allotted.
So we'll stop and get more gas.
Every stop we make exposes us. Every exposure increases the risk of getting caught. An extra 80 kilos means the Coney shock absorbers I installed for this job will not give us the ability to outmaneuver any police that might be chasing us. Which means, if there is a chase, we lose our advantage. Which also increases the possibility of getting caught. I don't want to get caught. You don't want to get caught.
Just drive the car, man, or you're going to catch a bullet to the brains!
And who's going to drive?
Shoot this asshole! I drive!
Not without the ignition code, you won't. Three men, 254 kilos. That was the deal.
Three men, 254 kilos.
Seat belts.
And they're off, with one less bank robber who was shot in the head and dumped on the street before taking off. We then get a terrific car chase scene through the streets of Nice, as the local police are no match for Frank's driving skills. After many death-defying stunts and one of the robbers puking out of the side window, Frank evades the police for good and completes the job. And again, as Ebert mentioned, the car chase scene is very reminiscent of the terrific chase scenes seen in Robert De Niro's Ronin, which was also filmed in France. And, again, was a damn good movie memories episode. Check it out. The main robber tries to change the deal and offer Frank more cash to drive them further. But Frank, of course, won't budge, and the three robbers hop into another car for the remainder of their getaway. Frank lives in a very nice and large house on the French Riviera. While watching the news on TV after cleaning his car, he learns that the robbers were apprehended by police after the second driver botched the job by crashing into a taxi cab after going down a one-way street. Frank then gets a visit from Inspector Tarconi, played by Francois Berléand. Tarconi can never seem to catch Frank, as it's sort of a cat-and-mouse game between the two. In many ways, the unlikely pair respect each other, and this will come into play later. Tarconi suspects Frank was part of the bank robbery, but he has no evidence of this, of course. They chat a bit and Tarconi leaves. Frank then gets a call from another job and he meets the potential clients at a bar.
Are you ready?
One bag, that's it.
Dimensions. Be specific.
1.50 meter by 1.5 meter.
Weight.
50 kilos, not more.
Destination?
24 Rue du Luxembourg. You're delivering to Mr.
Rule 2, no names. Time of pickup.
7 o'clock in the morning, at the front door.
A package. 1.50 meter by 50, 50 kilos, 250 kilometers. Traveling within the speed limit, one stop for refreshments. 40,000. Half now, half on delivery. Delivery will be at noon. No one's there, it is not my responsibility. I'll leave the package. Once we make a deal, the terms of that deal cannot be changed or renegotiated.
How's the rule?
It's rule number one. Do we have a deal?
You're very precise.
Transportation is a precise business.
The other two rules Frank has, besides never change the deal, are no names and never open the package. When picking up the package from the latest deal, Frank thinks he has a flat tire because he hears a thumping noise. He opens the trunk and pushes the large black duffel bag to the side of the trunk to grab the spare tire. He then changes the flat and continues to drive. He stops at a gas station for something to eat, but then something is bothering him about the bag in the trunk. After leaving the gas station, he stops on the side of the highway and breaks his own rule. He opens the package, which has a tied-up woman, played by Shu Qi, and her mouth is duct tape. Frank gives her something to drink.
Just gonna make a little hole so you can drink. That's all I'm gonna do. Please. Please. Please, come on.
Come on. Drink. That's enough. Good girl. I'm going to take the tape off. If you scream, I'll have to kill you. Understand?
I have to pee. You want me to do it in your car?
Okay. I'm going to take my knife out, so don't scream, okay? It's to cut you free. You don't need your mouth to pee. You have 1 minute. 55. 54. 53. 52.
15. 7. 2. Time's up. Don't make me drag you out.
The woman breaks free of the rope, which is down in the bushes below the highway, and runs away. Frank tracks her down and brings her back to the car, though she is screaming the entire time. Two motorcycle cops had stopped on the freeway to investigate the abandoned BMW and heard the screaming and tried to, you know, help the woman. That was a bad idea, as Frank destroys each guy with the fighting skills only a special ops badass could possess, which is always a trait of Jason Statham films, which is also why I enjoy his movie so much. Frank then takes the woman to his delivery destination, a sleazy guy named Wall Street, played by Matt Schultz.
You're late. Ran into a little problem.
Nothing serious?
Nothing serious.
You opened the package.
All three. Never opened the package.
I like that. Rules.
You can't get anything done in the world without rules. You're a foreigner, right? It's a nice little thing you've got going for yourself here. High class, good reputation. I didn't get your name.
Rule 2. No names.
Of course. You don't count.
Why? Should I?
No.
That concludes the deal.
You know, I was wondering if you wouldn't mind transporting something for me.
That's what you do, right? You deliver, no questions asked.
Why not? Wait.
Maybe a kilo.
Destination.
Grenoble. 306 Rue de Lac. A Mr. All right. I forgot. Rule 2.
I like him.
Frank stops at another gas station to grab a bite to eat, but when he returns to his car, it explodes. Seems that the package from Wall Street was a bomb. An unamused Frank returns to the house he dropped off the woman at and decides to kick some ass. However, Wall Street is nowhere to be found, but the other four henchmen take a good beating from Frank, and a few end up dead. This fight scene and the rest, of course, are all top-notch. Super fun to watch. No shitty slow motion, which is so overdone nowadays. None of those types of fights here. Frank steals one of the cars from the garage and speeds away. However, he has a familiar stowaway hiding in the back seat. The same woman from before. He stops and dumps her out of the car and leaves her tied up in the middle of the road. But he decides he can't do that and puts her back in the car. He then takes her back to his house and gives her some food.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions. No long speeches, just keep it simple, got it? Who are you?
My name is Eli. I come from different... Oh.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions. Nothing more, nothing less. You want to try again? What kind of shit am I in?
Deep shit. Very deep shit. Those guys...
Sorry, I won't say anything.
Bon appetit.
Where are you going?
To bed. Can't think straight when I'm tired. A good night's sleep, I always see things better.
Can I leave?
Be my guest.
Eli eats her ramen noodles, but doesn't leave Frank's house. She instead snoops around and discovers his old military gear and photos and medals. She falls asleep on his couch. When Y is flipping through the pictures at Frank's house, the photo of the little boy with the monkey really is Jason Statham. Wall Street, in the meantime, is shocked to hear that his men were beaten up by Frank, whom he believed was dead from the bomb in his car. Y feels safe with Frank at his house, now that she knows that he used to be in the military. She attempts to make him breakfast, and then Inspector Tarconi shows up at the door.
Ah, Mr. Frank. Is your invitation for coffee still open?
Sure, come on, please. Sit. Madeleine?
Homemade?
Yes. I'll bring some more.
My mother used to make fresh melon every morning. I smell them and my whole childhood comes back in one big flood. Like Proust. You ever read Proust, Mr. Frank?
Nope.
Ah, it's fantastic. Memory like a steel trap. It would have been a great cup, a real detail man.
Milk?
Please, milk. Thank you. I used to have a memory like Proust, like a filing cabinet up there. I would see something and remember it like that. Like a license plate. I could see a plate and it was printed in my head. Now I need all the help I can get remembering whose plate goes with whose car. Like this one.
Mine.
Memories.
Tarconi has his license plate from the car explosion at the gas station, but Lai gives Frank an unexpected alibi. Tarconi is always one step behind Frank. However, Tarconi never seems to be upset that he never catches Frank. He almost respects that Frank keeps to himself and doesn't overly flaunt his illegal activities. After Tarconi leaves Frank's house, a number of Wall Street's men shoot up Frank's house with some heavy artillery, including missile launchers. Frank and Y escape through an underground passage before the house is completely blown up. They end up scuba diving to safety. Frank and Y are questioned by Tarconi at the police station, but of course they say they were out for a swim when the house was blown up. Again, Tarconi is one step behind. When he leaves his office briefly, Y quickly looks up the car of Wall Street on Tarconi's computer and discovers his real name and information. Frank just wants to walk away from this mess, but Y wants to track down the man that kidnapped her. Frank begrudgingly agrees to help Y find the man. They find Wall Street in an office, but then get a surprise. He works for Y's father, Mr. Kwai, played by Rick Young.
Y!
我不会再让你这么做了。你知道你已经害死了很多人吗？ 你还记得你怎么害死我妈的吗？现在你想杀我吗？来呀！
Would I kill my own daughter? Lie. Come on now. Put it down. We'll talk.
She thinks we're smuggling people in containers.
I don't know where you get these ideas.
Stay away!
Would you kill your own father?
Please. I'm begging you. Stop what you are doing.
I do what I do. I am who I am. I'll never change. So if you're going to kill me, kill me. But if you don't, get this gun out of my face. Give me.
No! He's innocent.
I know he's innocent. Oh, you have such a good heart. Always interested in saving innocent people. Well, here's your big chance. Drop your gun, and you'll save one. Kill him!
No!
The police are on the way up.
What now?
Take her. Send in Leo. I need him to wrap something up. Just for the record, there are 400 people in that container. Only 395 made it here alive.
Fred!
Inspector, am I glad you're here?
What is this?
This man used my partner's daughter here to try and blackmail us.
Luckily, my security got the drop on him.
I want to press charges, kidnapping, extortion, assault.
I know this man.
Well, I suppose in your business, you have to know all types. Now, should I call my lawyer?
We'll handle it. I'll expect all of you down at my office to give you statements.
As soon as I contact my lawyer, we'll be more than happy to oblige.
Tarconi came in at the nick of time before Frank might have actually been killed by Lai's father. Tarconi puts Frank in lockup for his own protection, actually. Alright, there's about 30 minutes left and plenty of questions need to be answered. Like, what is Lai really trying to do? And what type of business is her father involved with? And how will Frank clear up this entire mess? It all happens in an action-packed finale, including one very cool fight scene involving lots of motor grease. You'll just have to watch the film to understand. Though that motor grease was molasses in real life. Again, I'm a huge fan of Jason Statham because he's a throwback to the great 80s action stars that are sorely missing today. Look, his films might not win any awards, but they are far more entertaining than any of the critically acclaimed boring films that win awards today. So, if you love the 80s and 90s action movies, you'll enjoy The Transporter. So, all right, some fun facts. Shu Chi was in a South Korean version of Charlie's Angels called Martial Angels in 2001. There was a thought that she could be involved with the martial arts stunts that appear often in The Transporter. However, the script really called for a hero to be the fighting expert, and her talents weren't used in The Transporter. The film surprisingly had a final rating PG-13, but that's because many of the scenes were cut to change the rating from R to PG-13. Most of what was cut were extra violent parts from the fight scenes. The unedited fight scenes can be found on most versions of the DVD. Jason Statham did most of his own stunts and did almost all of the driving during the car chases. He did not know how to kickbox, but had to train in martial arts before shooting began. Alright, we have a special guest who does lots of transporting around the country, and that is Sonny Pooney of the Grown Up Rock Podcast and also Podcast Rusk City. He joins me to talk about this film. Does he like it or not? We never know with Sonny. So let's find out, and then I'll be back next week to talk about yet another random movie from my DVD collection. Okay, we're back with Sonny Pooney from the Grown Up Rock Podcast and Podcast Rock City. Welcome back, Sonny.
Oh, you know I love the action flicks. Gotta come back.
Yeah, and this one, for me, Jason Statham is really a throwback to those 80s action stars like Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Van Damme, where I pretty much see any film that he's in because, for me, he's consistently always good. And the films may vary in quality, but he always delivers. So how do you feel about him as an actor?
I love him. And one of the things that I love is that his accent isn't too thick. So I don't have to put on the closed captioning or whatever. Because at times, some of these foreign type films, or you get an actor that's either English or Australian or whatever, that their they're because I'm used to the Latin accent just because I lived in California most of my life.
Sure.
But it's the English accent that usually gets me. And I'm like, what did they just say? And then at times they use different words. So I'm like, I don't even know what that word means. But Jason doesn't have that. So it's like he's Americanized, and that helps. And he's more like Bruce Willis to me. That's like, I watch every Bruce Willis movie there is, and I've seen some terrible Bruce Willis movies. But yeah, he's kind of like the Bruce Willis to me.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And we all have those actors, and I think that's great. So it's interesting. This film, box office-wise, it didn't set the world afire, but it obviously had enough juice for two more sequels. So for an action film, it wasn't a huge budget. The special effects and stunts are really well done. So I'm assuming this would be a cable film or rental that kind of made up for the lack of box office success, and I'm assuming that's how you discovered it.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely a cable watch, because the first thing I saw Jason in was The Italian Job.
Right.
That's when I really noticed. So then, you know, you kind of deep dive going, oh, I wonder if that dude's in other films. Right. And so I caught it as a cable thing.
OK. And then where did you, if you can remember, where did you go to next after The Italian Job? Was it just whatever was around?
God, I can't remember because I don't know all of his movies. But it would have had to have been another box office hit, because this is more like an independent foreign film.
It is.
That's not usually where I go next.
So this, interestingly enough, The Italian Job was right after The Transporter. So you might, I don't know if you went back. So I don't know if you saw like Snatch and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
I did see Snatch. Mm-hmm. And I might have seen that one first. I might have seen that one before this one.
Okay.
And I did see Transporter 2 before I saw this one.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So I was going to ask you about the sequel. So where does this rank in the other two movies of the three?
Yeah. So I would say this is third out of the three. And that's,
oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Mainly because, dude, the lady, she's not attractive. But then when you see Transporter 2 and you have Kate and Amber, oh my God. It's like, okay, this went from foreign film, low budget, to American film, blockbuster summer movie. Right. Like that's the difference in the two films. So when I went backwards, I'm like, oh, this first one's okay. And I get it, because you got to build from somewhere. But it kind of feels like it was one of those ideas that maybe originated in Europe, and somebody in America goes, we need to bring that over here. That's got something.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because I was going to talk about, you know, the damsel in distress character of Lai. I just thought she was a bit weak. I mean, attractive wise, not for you, but how did you feel about her as a character?
Yeah, I thought she was weak, right? Yeah. Like, like in Transporter 2, which I guess we'll keep going back to the movie, but yeah. But Amber plays more of she's been hurt, and emotionally she's hurt, mm-hmm. right? But she doesn't come off as weak, right? And where Lai just comes up, but she comes off as a kid too.
Yes.
Right. And there's a dad in the movie. So I'm like, oh, I guess she's coming off as a teenage kid. Because I will tell you that when I first kind of realized that they were talking about 50 kilos as the weight, I was thinking that maybe Frank thought that he was transporting a kid.
Mm.
And that's why when he saw the moving in the bag, that's why you opened the bag.
Right. Because that's his thing. He never does that. He has the three rules he lives by.
And I figured that's what he was internally fighting against, is, well, what if that's a kid?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's anti-hero. I love the anti-hero movies. It's hard not to watch these three movies because of that.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, me too. I'm a sucker for the quiet but obviously dangerous action heroes. You know, they're never looking for a fight. They always find them, though, but it never ends well for the other guy. And, yeah, it's the hesitant hero, the anti-hero. And so this plot actually kind of keeps you guessing throughout. Do you think the film is successful in balancing the mystery angle with the action?
Yes. And I also liked that, like, when she first ran, he found her right away. There is no weakness in the dude. Right. All the weakness is internal. The weakness is not his execution of jobs. Right. And so I like that a lot. And it did keep the action going. And man, there were some unique action scenes in this, because come on, we've seen every single action clip on the planet. Right. But I don't know if I've ever seen a car go off the bridge and land on a car carrier.
Right.
Right. I've never seen oil being purposely spilt and then using basically bike pedals as traction. I've never seen that before. Have you?
No, never. That grease scene is pretty awesome.
Right. So they, not only did they do action, but it was unique action, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So with the exception of Frank, I would say my favorite character is definitely Inspector Tarconi. And I like their somewhat complicated relationship. And obviously it progresses throughout the trilogy. How did you feel about him?
I love that, right? That's almost like a buddy cop type thing on the side, right? That you don't ever get, are they friends? Are they frenemies?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he kind of alludes to their frenemies. I think the inspector is almost in awe of what this guy does, because one of the things in this movie, shouldn't the inspector be pissed the two cops died?
Right. He doesn't care. He couldn't care less.
Yeah, that was a little odd, because isn't that part of his team?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Yeah, yeah, it was almost like, yeah, it's almost an afterthought. That's a good point. Didn't even think about that. So what, you kind of mentioned this, but what about the film did you really enjoy? You can continue with that. And then what would you have changed? And obviously, it sounds like definitely why, being the main damsel in distress, you would have adjusted.
Yeah, I love that Frank is basically perfect. I love the calming explanation of there can't be four of you. And let me tell you all the reasons why. Love that the robbers shoot the guy right away. So obviously he was thinking about, if I got to shoot somebody, I guess it's you.
Right.
So that was done really well. I thought that the bad guy, so I guess we'll call him Wall Street.
Yeah.
He calls Frank the foreigner. Isn't Wall Street the foreigner? Like, they're in Europe.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know how Americans are. They think everyone's, you know, the center of the world.
I love the nuances of, and I noticed this the last time I watched it, which was a couple of weeks ago, and I guess I hadn't noticed this before. Mm-hmm. The first time the inspector leaves the house and goes to his car to get in, there's a little bit of the door stuck.
Yeah. And
immediately the director kind of showing you the good guy having to struggle through life and the bad guy's living it up kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you have to kind of come to that yourself. That's not put out there for you. I'm not sure if they made money from Orangina. Have you ever seen Orangina in a movie?
No, that's a good product placement.
Right. I love Orangina. Don't get me wrong, but it was good product placement. The things I didn't like, I already said lie. I mean, I just think you could have had a better actress. There was some editing mistakes, and to me the two that stick out that I can't let go, that is, okay, if you're going to put tape on Lai's mouth and there's going to be a scene where you cut it to give her drinks, then when the movies keep going, the movie is continued and she has tape in her mouth, it has to either be cut or not cut, and it was back and forth.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've ever seen that, but that bugs me.
You're right, and I do actually remember that, and for whatever reason, either I just let it go or I suspended disbelief, but yeah, that's a good one.
And then I get done with watching the movie a couple of weeks ago, and it comes to my mind, which has never come to my mind either. How do the bad guys know where he lives?
Yeah, that's true, because he's
supposed to be like this undercover. And how do they even know he's home? How do they know he's home?
That's true, and they totally destroy his place. He goes underground into the whatever the water is, yeah.
So much like I've said on my own podcast that I hate concept albums because it pigeonholes you into the story.
Sure.
I also hate when there's stuff left on the cutting room floor because you're trying to get the movie to be 92 minutes.
Right, right.
And I got a feeling all that was probably filmed and somehow left on the cutting room floor.
That's a great point. But would you rather have this film be too long or too short?
That's hard. I'd rather have it at 92 minutes. That's why I know that's why they're making the decisions.
Sure.
But whoever's watching the movie back, can't they go, hey, okay, that editing, we can just fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can't fix it. I don't know. But shouldn't we try to figure out how the bad guys know where he lives?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, because at least in Transporter 2, there's a thingy on the bottom of the car.
Right.
Right? So you don't know if that's a... I know where the person's at, which we find out that is, it's a tracker and a bomb at the same time, but at least something like that. But you can't put that in the movie after it's already all been filmed,
right?
And you're trying to edit it, right? So my problem is that you watch some of these movies so many times, it's like, hey, that's a mistake.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And it depends on how much you love the movie, you let it go, or you're just like, oh, this needs to change.
Yeah.
So his go-to car, I believe it's a BMW.
Yeah.
What would be your go-to car if you were an action hero, or if you were like Statham's character?
Oh, 100% Dodge Challenger. Dude, I'm a Dodge guy the whole way. I own a Dodge Challenger because of it.
Nice.
Yeah. So
are they still making those?
So last year was the final, and now they're doing them, but it's, I think, part electric or whatever. And, you know, I want a gas guzzler. So I have a gas guzzler. Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen what they did to the Mustang. And it looks like a SUV now.
Yeah. That's a little weird. Yeah, it is. I want the muscle look of the car.
Yeah.
I don't really need the, you know, 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds, because I've always been thinking, where could you possibly need to go 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds?
Right.
Right. And if you're trying to get away from somebody, 60 ain't going to cut it. So it needs to go 0 to 120 in 2.2 seconds. So I don't really need that, but the look of it is just so manly.
It is.
And I've had cars that maybe don't look so manly, but as I'm getting older, for whatever reason, those cars just make me feel good.
Well, yeah, and it used to be, if you look back at the, you know, older films, like in the 70s, even the 80s, you had different looks to cars. Almost every car looks the same now, and it sucks.
Yeah, I don't love that.
Do you prefer action movies that are in the United States, or do you like, you know, quote unquote, foreign action films?
And I am 50-50 on that, because I like the ones that are in the United States, especially if it's somewhere I've lived.
Sure.
Because that puts a whole new spin on it, right? Like, we've watched movies that have been done in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, oh my God, that's a Bay Bridge.
That's right.
So that part is cool. But I don't mind it being in Europe, because there's Ronin, right?
Yeah.
Great car chasing type movie. Awesome. I've never been to any of those places, and I think it's great to watch. My question
Born
for
Identity.
You is,
My
question for you is, what is it about the car chase that we love so much?
Yeah, I think it's something we can never do, probably. Or
is that what it is?
Or maybe it is something we could do. We just don't have the guts to do it, because we know we probably crash and everything. But there's something exhilarating about it, and it's the jump cuts. And I'm sure the car chases that we see on television, they're not exactly like that, because you don't have the music going, you don't have the quick cuts, and you don't have that acceleration. I mean, a lot of it is movie magic, but I don't think it would really, you know, translate to, you know, reality.
Yeah, there's something, I think for me, it is because it could be real, but I choose not to do it.
Right.
Because when I see those same things in a plane or a jet, it doesn't interest me at all.
No, I think it's because of the plane and the jet. You can only, you can move around a little bit, meaning like the plane, but you're still up in the sky. Whereas if you're on the city street, there could be all sorts of crazy things in your way.
Yeah.
All right, final thoughts, and if it comes to mind, what is actually your favorite Jason Statham film?
My favorite Jason Statham film is still Italian Job.
I
like him as a side character. I don't need him to be the lead character. But all of the lead character movies I've seen him in are good movies, but he ends up in some of these foreign-type films sometimes that are not always huge productions, so that probably doesn't do him a bunch of good. I would tell you this movie's worth a watch just for the action.
Yeah.
Did you feel like the music was a little out of place? Like a foreign film that has hip hop music, a little out of place, right?
Yeah, but I think maybe it's of the era. This is what, 2002?
Yeah. So they pick music of the era, but it doesn't fit the feel.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Did you like The Expendables? Because that's basically like a super group type movie, you know?
I did. Red?
Yeah.
I liked that one too. There was two of those.
Yep.
All of those movies that, you know, kind of bring the team back together and was partially anti-hero. Leverage, that TV show. Oh my God, I love that show. And it was a little bit of that, right? So, that definitely intrigues me, because they don't have to have superhuman powers.
No.
So it feels like it's a little more real.
Agreed. Well, thank you. And I have the other two films of The Transporter, so I'm sure we'll get to that at some point in the next 40 years. So hopefully we're still around. Thanks again. Thank you again, Sonny.
Good to be on.
If you enjoy this podcast and are an iTunes user, please do the show a favor and head on over to the official iTunes page for Damn Good Movie Memories. Be sure to leave a rating and a review. This will allow the show to appear higher in the algorithm and spread the joy of this podcast to the masses. If you are not an iTunes user, you can still listen and subscribe on Podbean. at damngoodmoviememories.podbean.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook under our Damn Good Movie Memories page. You can also listen to a limited number of episodes on YouTube. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and be sure to tune in next week for an all-new episode of Damn Good Movie Memories.